Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back well into hour three, about 35 minutes to fill out this busy Monday. And, of course, the 14-race card at Gulfstream providing a ton of the backdrop and the storylines. And there's a bunch of fun storylines involved in Get Mother a Rose's win in the Honey Fox, and not the least of which, of course, is Get Stormy. For the same connections, Mrs. Sullivan and Tom Bush, now at Crestwood, and of course the sire of Got Stormy and many other successful runners out there. And here is a four-year-old filly that was a May foal, and it just feels like even going into her last start when we liked her in the the South Beach. And she just had a little bit too much to do late under Rosario. So with Rosario unavailable, Junior Alvarado, who is terrific on this type of a horse, gets the call, and it all works out absolutely beautifully, a perfectly timed ride. And the gift that keeps on giving, Gets Stormy for Mrs. Sullivan and Tom Bush. And he joins us now. Tom, congratulations.
Thank you very much, Steve.
You know, she's a fun story, and you know, you had to dip into Maiden 40 company to break her maiden, but it seems like the minute that happened, the minute she came through at Belmont last summer, it was like a light bulb went on, and now she's just ratcheting up the ladder.
Yeah, it's, it was not, we were fortunate to be able to run her and a lighter kind of field to get her started. She was a backward, immature filly, and you know, she took little baby steps forward, and she's really come on since November, and finally starting to fill out. And she's got a little bit more leg now, and she's had a good 3 months down here, and we were wanting to stretch her out to see if we could do that, and we saw in the South Beach that she definitely was going to be able to stretch out. She just needed a little better trip, and she came into the race great, and she made that one run like she does sprinting, and that's what we were trying to do going long, and it worked out great.
How much of your understanding of her is attributable to, you know, the experience you had with Get Stormy himself?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of his offspring, and you know, there are similarities, and some of them are different. This filly is certainly fits the Get Stormy mold of they tend to be late maturing, but temperament wise, she's like most of them. They're very, very level headed, and she's a dream to train, and she happens to just be an extra sweet, kind filly to be around, so that makes it fun too. She likes attention, and she's you can see that she's coming into her own.
Well, and of course, you also, the whole time that you received her and got her going late in her 2-year-old year, you already had a little bit of a template because she's a foal to Clyde's Runner.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, we know a lot about the families because I've been training for Mrs. Sullivan for a good bit of time now. So we know the families pretty well, and that usually helps.
Well, the dam Run Rosie, a Cherokee run. And so some of that sprint speed, and then from Get Stormy, the ability to stretch out as a May foal. And in fact, I'm going to just turn back to my pages here for a second, because it'll have her. She was born on May 8th.
Yeah.
May 8th was her foal date. So, I mean, she's generally going to be younger, you know, in terms of actual physical, than most of those that she runs against. And, you know, how you said backwards, I mean, how much of her development is just a case of her being a fairly late foal?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has a good bit to do with it. And you combine that with the fact that Stormy does seem to want to get a little bit of, they seem to be a little late maturing, the combination of the two things. It's pretty clear that's probably what happened with this filly. But she's always been very light on her feet and a very easygoing filly, doesn't take anything out of herself training. So it was just a matter of the filly, you know, just growing up and getting a little bit more leg and a little bit more muscle. And we're tickled to death to see her make the progress.
The riding scenario and talking about that South Beach, because I made a very verbal case for her, back going into the South Beach, and Joelle Rosario was seemingly maybe a little too patient with her and either waited too long or, you know, a little bit of, I'm not sure. I don't want to say she flattened out, but it just seemed like she didn't really get that she got the ride or that she got the trip. Either way, she arrived on the scene, you know, too late. What was different in here? Certainly Junior Alvarado, a guy, when it comes to a, you know, timing rides on routing, he's really underrated. And I was very excited when I saw that you'd secured Junior for her.
Yeah, she actually in the South Beach, I mean, she ran 68 feet further than anyone in the race. And I thought the wide trip was, you know, very costly for the filly. And it's never a great trip on turf to be wide all the way. So I think that had a lot to do with it. But Junior, of course, does, you know, fit these kind of fillies that want to make that one run. He's patient. And my only instruction to him in the paddock were to do your magic. And that's what he did.
That's pretty funny. You know, she arrives on the scene and corralled Silver Kitten. It wasn't really in tremendous doubt for more than a stride or two. And, you know, the half mile went in 46-1, so it was brisk enough. I mean, it felt like the race was run honestly.
Yeah, I mean, that's plenty of pace. And, you know, we were in the right spot with that pace. You know, she was a little bit further back than what she usually is. And as it turns out, it may turn out to complement her style down the road.
Well, and it also, from every indication from that performance, and she had already kind of shown that in that South Beach, it looks like she'll go further too. It doesn't look like she has to be limited to, you know, to the mile distance.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the race suggests that, and her style of running is critical too. And I think these horses that have a turn of foot but want to make one run, you know, they don't use themselves the first part of the race, so they always have a great finish, and that makes us think that, you know, she'll stretch out.
Well, and just from a figure standpoint, and, you know, it's a little tricky to use numbers on, you know, other than pace, figures, a little tough to apply. However, she still, you know, did break 90 on the buyer scale, and she's, you know, approaching low single digits on Thoroughgraph. She had run a 3.5 on in that South Beach. this is, you know, this has got to be exciting. And of course, you know, for Mrs. Sullivan, just very gratifying. I mean, what a program, you know, you guys have fashioned.
I'm very, very fortunate to train for Mrs. Sullivan. She's extremely patient, as most breeders are. And, there isn't anything she wouldn't do to help a horse. You know, the whole team, I mean, she's just a dream to train for.
How many mares is she sending to get Stormy?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, she certainly sends, you know, three or four every year. And of course, we've Phil Hager from Taproot Bloodstock. He's always looking at every yearling that goes through the ring, and we've bought, you know, several nice ones out of the ring as well to try to support the horse. So we're having a little luck there, and we're having a little luck with Mrs. Sullivan's breeding. So we're big supporters of the stallion, and we're hoping people are starting to notice him, because he's definitely doing well enough.
Well, and we should also fold in, this is not the only the only one that you got going that is a stakes horse, because Get Smokin', the 3-year old, with a pair of, you know, pair of placements already this year.
Yeah, he ran two very solid races down here, and we decided to skip the Palm Beach just to let him catch his breath and fill out a little bit more. He's a lanky, tall, leggy, real stretchy kind of colt, and giving him a month without breezing. He had his first breeze yesterday with a month off, and he's really, really filled out and started to sprout on us. He grew an inch or so and probably put on 110 pounds. So we're pretty pleased the way he looks, and he'll have a few more works, and he'll probably run on Florida Derby Day.
Nice. Now, this is not a homebred. This is one of the ones you bought.
Yeah, this bought this colt as Phil Hager bought him as a yearling for $11,000. So
unbelievable! Unbelievable!
He's going.
Holy cow!
Yeah, he was bred by the Knuckles in Kentucky. They're
great, nice,
great people, and they raise a good horse. So we're hope we can do some good for them too.
Well, Hirstland, yeah, there it is, Hirstland Farm.
Yep.
And just looking, there's a 2-year-old this year by Alternation, a colt. Get Smokin's a gelding, so you know, taking your time is makes perfect sense. He'll be around, you know, forever, and everybody knows what a horse like this that shows early promise, that's gelded, he'll probably run till he's 8 years old under your care.
Let's hope so. That's what we want.
Well, there happens to be a full sister that's on the ground, and now actually is, well, it'll be a short yearling, 2019. So there's a full sister to Get Smokin' that might turn up somewhere. And the dam was a Smoke Glacken mare. So really it's the same kind of breeding, a little bit of a speedy, you know, a little bit of speed on the dam side with Got Stormy. Interesting.
Yeah, he seems to, he's a little bit of a, more of a go-getter. He's a little bit more high-strung than many of them that we've had. And he takes a little chilling out. And, you know, we're careful not to let him do too much in the morning, because he wants to do a little too much. And he was tough early on in the paddock, but he's settled down now, and he's figured it out.
Well, not a bad winter. I mean, you haven't really run that much down there, but if you broke camp today and went back to New York, you'd go with a graded stake win, a graded stake placement, and and another stake placement, two more placements. Pretty good.
Hoping to build on that, and hopefully we can have a good spring when we get back home.
Well, and how much more running are you going to do before heading home?
I mean, we usually go back sometime between the 1st of April and the 15th of April, and we kind of watch the weather. And, you know, I'm not sure where I'm going with Get Smokin' after his next race. And, definitely have not delved into where we're going to run Getmother Rose. So that'll come into play here in the next couple of weeks.
What's going on with the older with that older horse that broke his maiden at the end of the year, the New York bred, Jimmy Jazz? He's got the winter off?
Jimmy Jazz is coming to me from Ocala in the next day or two. And,
How about that?
Yeah, I'm hoping to have a good year with him. He's a late maturing horse for sure, and he really was figuring it out very nicely at the in the fall here late. So I'm really, really hopeful he could turn into a nice New York bred on the turf.
How about that? He's an English Channel, and
yep.
took him 10 starts to break his maiden. The news there, this is for Dreammaker Racing, and just looking, this was a $9,000 purchase. Unbelievable. I'll tell you, Tom, there's a lot. If people aren't catching on to some of the themes we're hitting here, homebreds and modest purchases in Tom Bush's hands, stakes results.
Well, hopefully he'll have a good summer for us. He's owned by a lot of people in the local, the Saratoga area, and so they're very big racing fans. So we're always happy to win races for Dreammaker.
Well, Tom, I don't have to say how happy I am when you win big races and a very nice situation here. This is a filly that has got just nothing but upside going forward. Get Mother a Rose, and those that stuck with her and saw what was to be seen in the South Beach, they got paid on Saturday.
I appreciate it very much, Steve.
And it's my pleasure. Tom Bush, everybody, one of our favorites. We might as well stay here. We've only got about 16, 18 minutes. Tony Black, actually, is going to jump in here for a minute. We'll get Tony to end the show. And as Casey gets a hold of Tony, let me give everybody the news that just came out from the Hall of Fame, and just got the, I just had it, now I lost it. Here it is. The Hall of Fame, the finalists on the ballot this year. And here we go. About 40 minutes ago, Brian Bouillet from the museum gave us the email, and it's being circulated out there. I see some of the listings. Come on. There we go. Here are the finalists. On the racehorse side, Blind Luck again. She gets another crack at it. Game On Dude. This is his first year of eligibility. Havre de Grace back again. Kona Gold, who's been knocking on the door. Rags to Riches. And also in his first year of eligibility and seems tough to deny, Wise Dan. So your racehorse candidates, Blind Luck, Game On Dude, Havre de Grace, Kona Gold, Rags to Riches, and Wise Dan. Six racehorses. One rider only again this year. Just one jock nominated this year, Corey Nakatani on the ballot. And on the trainer side, David Whiteley back and has been debated. And then in terms of contemporary, Mark Cassie, Christophe Clement, and Doug O'Neill are your trainer candidates. So a total of 10, six horses, or make it 11, six horses, four human on the trainer side, and one on the jockey side, Corey Nakatani. And with that, Tony Black standing by. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. You know I was listening. I had to send you a few texts. A good choice on Corey Nakatani. If I was voting, he'd have my vote. I would have had his vote for him. He's a deserving individual. Been around a long time. Has done a lot of things. been a good, upstanding individual. You got me started when Johnny D started on riders and race riding. I mean, I have all the respect for him and everybody, but I also have my own opinion about things like that. You want me to start now?
Yeah, go ahead, and then we'll don't. You have to leave a little time for Collegeville Girl too.
All right. Listen, when it comes to race riding, as in any sport, you can look at football, basketball, baseball. Rules have changed as the times have changed. You know, what you could do in 1970 in football in the NFL, you can't do in 1980 or 90 or 2020. You know, you can't lead with your helmet. You can't blindside somebody, you know. But years ago, when Steve Van Buren and guys like that I met, you know, and they had scars all over their body. Steve, I used to sit and talk with him. You could do just about anything in a competitive way to bring the opponent down. Well, in race riding, it's the same thing. There were things you could get, you could do, and you could be really hanging on each other and really, you know, doing past the point of intimidation, actually, you know, somewhat causing interference. Well, you can't do that now, but you can draw it up to the line of race riding where it's done within the rules of racing. And, of course, you have to know where you're riding and what is the stewards have been allowing. You know, it doesn't stay ironclad every place. But you know how far out you can come to a horse at the turn or the elbow. You know how far out you can come and carry him out, and you can drop in and do the different things that race riders do. But it has to be done with finesse and within the rules of racing. And I applaud riders when they do it right. You know, it's done right. It probably won't result in a disqualification. It's not always, we're not out there running single file, holding each other's hands. We're out there trying to take a position away from your opponent. And if you can do it within the rules of racing and not overdo it, maybe the best horse doesn't win, but the best horse that caused the most amount of slight intimidation or was ridden the most aggressively, but within the rules, wins. Not always the best horse. Like I said, we're not running single file, holding each other's hand out there. We're trying to take position and money away from each other. But you got to do it within the rules of racing. And when it came to, I saw you talking about Mike Smith. You know, I got this pet peeve with the whip rules, and you know, and I don't know what they do over there, and I know what they do at other tracks in this country. And we do have to accommodate racing and abide by the rules and whip rules. But if you have people monitoring the races that really know what they're looking at and can, you don't need a blanket rule, because a blanket rule doesn't fit every scenario or fit every circumstance out there. If you have people riding, watching the races that are really qualified, know what they're looking at, they'll pull a jock up after the race because he'll be informed and penalized. Listen, that was uncalled for. I watched a race from Mahoning Valley a couple days ago, and I actually called out there, and then I hung the phone up. I thought, did they watch the four horse finishing second in this race, the stewards, and call that kid in? Because that was a disgrace to come down the stretch, and you never put both hands on the reins. You never put your stick down. The horse took some funny steps. He was competitive and finished on the board, but I hope somebody called him in and says, you don't do that, son. You know what? And the next time you do it, you'll be watching horses run from the jock's room. You won't be riding them. You know, and I watch races. And, you know, I don't know what the whip rule is at Mahoning Valley, but I couldn't, you know, I did call Steve. I'll be real honest with you. And then I hung the phone up. I says, what are you trying to do? Don't be an ass. You know, shut up, Black. You know, don't burn one more bridge. So I hung the phone up. But, you know, and real quick, you know, the other thing, I watch TVG, and sometimes I should just turn it off. I love when these guys, I don't love it, I can't stand it when these guys start talking about changing leads, and Rich Perloff say, he's on his wrong lead down the stretch. Well, what lead was he on for the most part in the running of the race? Did he go a distance of ground and he was on his right lead, leaving the gate, going long, and because the jock couldn't switch him around and was trying to get good position going around the first turn, going long, he left him on his right lead. Horses can run around a turn on their right lead, they just don't negotiate it as easily. Then he went down the backside on his right lead. He went all the way down the backside. Been on his right lead going mile and 16th from the get-go out of the gate, round the turn, all the way down the backside. He goes into the 3/8 pole, and he switches to his left lead because now, you know, it's the latter stage of the race. The jock's got good position, and he's not worried about getting his horse too much on the bit, moving his hands. He pops him over to his left lead. He runs down around the turn on his left lead, comes to the 3/16 pole on his left lead. Well, what's his fresh lead? His left lead. He's been on it for an eighth of a mile. That's his fresh lead. Don't worry about him changing to his right lead through the lane. Running straight, horses can run just as fast on the left lead or the right lead when they're running straight. They only need their left lead to negotiate turns a little easier because their hind end follows their front end better on the left lead going around turns. And you take the bank of the turn into the consideration and everything else. But it really gets me when people, you know, you got me on a soapbox this morning, Steve, but it gets me when these commentators say, oh, he's on his wrong lead. No, he's on his fresh lead. It might be his left lead through the lane, but it's his fresh lead. Okay, now you had enough, Steve?
Well, what went on there was interesting. I was against the whole, from a principal standpoint, regarding this race, but the result demands some conversation, and the way Ortiz was obviously trying to impede the progress,
right,
of Luis Saez. Very happy for Saez in particular. Right. And you could tell how much it meant to him. Tony, I do want you to also talk about the Collegeville girls' success yesterday. She was spectacular, but I do have to mention this very sad news that is coming out of Arizona. I had seen that. This is unbelievable. Richard Gomez at Rito has died after that fall yesterday. And, Tony, you and I, speaking of Luis Saez, who
lost a brother.
Right? He sighted his brother yesterday or
right.
Saturday night. He wrote a beautiful tribute to his brother. And, Gomez is he's an older guy, right? I mean, he's been around a long time.
Right.
Wow.
We've heard so many people that we've associated with in the horse racing game pass away in the last, over the year easily. But, Tommy Trotter, Mr. Quigley, Luis Saez, Juan Saez. And then I saw Terry Meeks made a statement. He said he was the first rider to have died in a spill since I think it was Juan Herrera. And he said, and I thought, well, you must not be following. He's not the first rider. In March 20-something of 2018, we lost Jose Flores here because of a riding spill. And I thought, boy, what's Terry looking at? But that's not the issue, and you don't bring stuff up like that now. But it's a hazardous business, and we take the hazards for granted as riders and people that sit on these horses, sometimes not even professional jockeys, exercise personnel, and people that take care of these horses. And we blank out in our minds the hazards and the dangers that are sometimes connected to this beautiful, beautiful business. But it's a business that you're dealing with animals, you're dealing with, at times, there's going to be catastrophic injuries, there's going to be misjudgment of riders and clipping heels. It in no way should take away from the beauty of the business, but it does make you, as a participant in the business and as a spectator, say, geez, look what these guys do, the people that take care of these horses, the people that ride these horses in the morning, the people that ride them in the afternoon, all the people that handle these horses. You know what? It's a beautiful business, but there is some downside to it. But don't let that be our focus. Let the beauty of the business progress and go on. This business is a tremendous business, and we could, the subject in its own. But my heart goes out to families and the people that have we've lost over the year, and rest in peace, and their families. My heart goes out to them.
Yeah, we'll have more, I'm sure, tomorrow. But Gomez, he's won 650 races in his career and has been riding at least 30 years. And, you know, just to not to try to make any, you know, grandiose point, but I don't know if anybody happened to have seen the story from Florida yesterday from, you know, from the Wellington, from the not from Wellington, but the from the equestrian world, but Canadian Catherine Morrell, she was killed in a fall. She and her mount Carrie Ann, who had come off of the track at Northlands, and she was working toward an Olympic try. She was hopeful to make the Olympics with Carrie Ann. I think she was 35 years old, give or take, and I saw that this morning. Yeah, so I mean, equestrian too.
Every form of equestrian activity has its hazards. Beautiful horses, beautiful athletes that ride them, but there is a hazard connected to them. Yeah, my heart goes out to her and her family also. You know, we watch the Olympics and we see these horses going out there like little machines, and the people riding them like such polished, qualified riders. And you know what? We don't think there is a downside to it, but there is. It can happen at any time.
Tony, let's try to wrap up on a positive note after citing these two tragedies. Yesterday, we were up against Collegeville, and she was unbelievable yesterday. And what did Richie have to say? And this was really kind of that race that you all kind of expected from her at some point.
Finally, yeah. You know, when I congratulated him, what he had to say is, I love you, brother. I love you, brother. That's what he had to say. But you know what? Watching the race, she finally left there, relaxed, and did what she's supposed to do. And when Angel asked her after they straightened out, she went right on about her business. And it looked like she was running easy and relaxed in the early stages, you know, not pulling on the bit and with a good position. And to what me watching her, you know, some of her races have just baffled me. I thought, did this really displace her? Why isn't she doing what she, I know she can do. But whatever he figured out, Richie, don't tell me everything, you know. Whatever he figured out, keep doing it, Richie, because she sure did what she was supposed to do yesterday. And she's got a lot of run to her, and when she runs like that, she'll go further. She will go down 2 turns.
She blew that race open, got a 84 buyer, which is way above par for state bred allowance company, and that undoubtedly you know, lit everybody up. So I was impressed. Well done.
Yep, she sure did it. Did what she was, we knew she could do, but she's yet to prove. But that's horse racing. You know, you figure these horses out sometimes as you go along, and it takes you a few races and to get back on track. And here they come and show you what you expect of them. And hopefully she'll just keep bringing it over there like that.
It was a good day. Good day. A good couple of days for Parks Based, because you also had Uriah St. Louis come up and win the Bernardini on Saturday.
Yeah, he's been traveling with that horse, and he's done a good job. You know, hey, Uriah, he doesn't miss a lot of dances, but he brings him over there, and he does the right thing. And that horse ran real well Saturday. So we're proud of Uriah too. Parks is taking and looking up when it comes to the quality that comes out of there. And you know what helps to have to get quality like that? The money's been so good for so many years, where now it's showing up in the horses that race there and in the horses that are bred in Pennsylvania. And that's why when we oppose anything that Tom Wolf's trying to do to take the money away from purses and reappropriate it to other avenues, it ain't going to happen. Like I told one of the state representatives, Big Bad Tom, Governor Tom Wolf, you ain't blowing this house down, Governor Tom Wolf. It ain't made of straw.
Well,
this horse racing house is made of cement, not straw. We only bed our horses down in straw and feed them hay, but we don't build our houses out of it. Governor, well, Big Bad Wolf, Tom Wolf.
I love it. Tony, this was great. I appreciate it. And if it's okay, I think we'll make that the visit for the week, because we got a lot to do Thursday, Friday with the three big race days at Tampa and at Aqueduct and Santa Anita.
Good. Right? That's great. Always a pleasure. You know that. Take care now, Steve. Bye.
You too. Tony Black, everybody. That was great. And what a fun morning. Plenty more to do tomorrow. We got Antonio De La Cerda. I want to get to Roger Atfield. I'm unsure about being Cohn and Joseph, because they're both gonna run this weekend again at Tampa. And I just had Patrick. I don't know. All right, we'll see. Maybe we'll get Andy being Cohn. She's running for the HBPA seat. So is La Cerda. De La Cerda. Anyway, thanks to Tommy Bush and Dale Romans, Brendan Walsh, Johnny and Tony, John White tomorrow, Andy Serling, some more of the trainers, Michael Way. Maybe we'll do that tomorrow with Michael, Zulu Alpha. Lots going on. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM or at our website too. Archive and podcast. Thanks. Talk to you tomorrow.
Racing news.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horseman, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options.